The title "To Believe a Lie" comes from William Blake. I refer to him a lot in other workshops. I've kind of based workshops in a number of his poems or statements. This comes from an unfinished poem that he wrote called "The Everlasting Gospel," which I'll talk about briefly in a minute. Let me just say a few words about Blake, and then we'll go into the actual theme of the workshop. Blake was a great English poet. He was an artist and engraver. He invented a kind of specific way of kind of engraving and etching his drawings, which he would illustrate his books with or other books. He actually lived in ages that is remarkable. He died the same year Beethoven did, which is also the same period of time when Goethe lived. So he had these kind of three great titans who lived during the same time period. It was also the same time that those three great British poets lived, Byron, Shelley, and Keats. So it was really the turn of that century was a remarkable time. He was born in 1757 and he died in 1827. Really a kind of remarkable person. I guess one of the words usually used to describe him was a visionary. From the time he was a child, he saw visions, he saw angels, a remarkable man, actually. He had a real love for Jesus, but not the Jesus of the Gospels. That's why the title of this work is called "The Everlasting Gospel." His view of Jesus was not that of theology, but one of art. He saw Jesus as being this great creative force that came into the world to kind of unify man and God. And it was surely an experience of Jesus that came from within him, not anything that was outside. In fact, he ends the poem, which again was unfinished, but he ends it, "I'm sure this Jesus will not do either for Englishman or Jew." By Englishman, he really meant Christian. His was a different view of Jesus. Anyway, the lines I'm going to read to you, which contain the words "to believe a lie," are actually very, very appropriate for the whole theme of the course. And obviously, Blake liked them so much that this is the second time he used them. They appeared earlier in another poem, "Auguries of Innocence," in slightly different form, but the same basic idea. Anyway, so this is what he wrote. "This life's five windows..." I'll read it first, and then I'll talk about it. "This life's five windows of the soul distorts the heavens from pole to pole and leads you to believe a lie when you see with, not through, the eye that was born in a night to perish in a night when the soul slept in the beams of light." This is a typical Blake in terms of the imagery and kind of the whole sounds and the rhythms of it. What he's talking about clearly is not seeing through the body's eyes. That's what he refers to when he says this life's five windows of the soul, which are the five senses. Right? And he says that this these senses, the body, distorts the heavens from pole to pole. Right? That you have no idea of the truth if you are looking through the body's eyes, right? And when you do that, when you look through the body's eyes, and to that we could also add when you think with the body's brain, you know, I think many of you are familiar with the lines in the course because I refer to them all the time, where Jesus tells us that the eyes don't see, ears don't hear, and brains don't think, right? Which includes thinking about what your eyes are reading when you read a book called A Course in Miracles, right? Don't believe anything you think, because what you think you are thinking, as we're told in the course, is not our real thoughts. Right? They're always based on the past. They're always based on a very, very limited, if not distorted, understanding of the world, the purpose of the world, and obviously of the heaven that lies beyond the world. There's no way we could even approximate that, as long as we think about what our bodies tell us. And Blake, of course, had that same direct experience. So that when you do that, when you look through the body's eyes, you will believe a lie. Right? And, of course, what we'll be talking about all day today is the fundamental lie that gave rise to a world of lies. Right? That's the original lie that somehow we were able to pull off the impossible and separate from our creator and source, to leave perfect love and perfect oneness and establish a thought system and a self that was outside of perfection and wholeness and totality. Right? That's the original lie. And then from that lie arose the entire perceptual universe. Right? The world of form, the world of time, the world of space. And since it comes from a lie, and ideas leave not their source, which we'll come back to, the original lie has never left its source in the mind, which is the home of lies. Split mind is the home of lies. And since ideas leave not their source, we should never be surprised that the world we perceive outside is still a projection, has never left the original lie, which is in the mind. And yet we continually believe what the world tells us and the body tells us. But again, we'll come back to that. So it leads you to believe a lie when you see with the eye instead of through the eye. And what he means, what Blake means by seeing through the eye, is what the Course would call vision. Christ's vision, the perception of the Holy Spirit, true perception, looking through Jesus' eyes. That then you would understand. But when you look with the eye and believe what the eye tells you, namely there's a world out here, filled with separated forms, bodies that have a beginning and an end in and of themselves, that keep them separate from other bodies, that have a beginning and an end in and of themselves, then everything you see will be a lie. Because the truth is oneness. Not separation. Not individuality. And the eye was born in night to perish in night. It was born in darkness and will die in darkness, because there's nothing there, right? When the soul, or the spirit, slept in the beams of light. And we could, I'm not quite sure if Blake meant it the way I'm going to say it, but I'll do it anyway, that our right mind is at home in the light that is the Holy Spirit, and still remains asleep in that love of the Holy Spirit. When early on in the text, Jesus has that beautiful passage when he tells us that he's kept every loving thought and kindness that we've ever had and has purified them of the darkness that hid the light. That's the same idea, that our minds are thoroughly safe in that light. And the part of us that feels outside of the light, in the darkness, in the lie, is a lie, and that's not who we are. And all the while we wander in the far country, there is that right-minded memory of who we truly are that is kept there for us. All right? And in the language of the Course, that's the Holy Spirit. He holds that for us. Right? That's what it means to go to Jesus for help. It's to return to that light. Many of you know the line. You may not know where it's from. It's from William Blake, also in his book, The Marriage of Heaven and Hell, in which he said that if the doors of perception were cleansed, then everything would appear to us, to man as it is, infinite. The doors of perception were cleansed, then everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. It's the same idea. Many of you may know the wonderful little book Aldous Huxley wrote years and years ago, decades ago, called The Doors of Perception, which are really about his experiences with mescaline. These are the days way before Timothy Leary and before hallucinogenics got a bad name. He was experimenting with mescaline, and he in his wonderful, beautiful book, he described the different world he saw under that, the influence of that. And the title of his book is The Doors of Perception, which is taken from Blake. I think there's a famous rock and roll group called The Doors. Am I right? Is that a British group? That's where that was taken from, actually. So, anyway, that quotation is very similar to the same idea that Blake is talking about.